Boom.
Are you ready?
Welcome to First Amendment Friday on the Lars Larson Show.
Friday is for everybody.
Today, Lars puts you in the driver's seat. You talk about what you want to talk about.
Government is the problem.
No topic is off limits.
Hey, looks like the Canadians are here.
Call 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-HEY-LARS.
Thank goodness it's Friday. Happy Friday.
This is
First Amendment Friday with Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It is my favorite day of the week, First Amendment Friday, and I've got a question to start you off. Before you get those calls in at 866-HEY-LARS, if states get a warning about fraud involving hundreds of millions of dollars, why in the world would they ignore that warning? I'm going to answer that question in a moment because I think there is a perfectly common sense answer, and that is greedy Democrats. But before I get into the details of that, welcome to First Amendment Friday, and welcome to the Radio Northwest Network, where for almost 30 years, we've been endeavoring to serve the Pacific Northwest states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho with honestly provocative talk. And if you want to take part in the conversation, that's easy. 866-HEY-LARS. And if you're a naysayer, naysayers we put right to the head of the line at 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And our poll on X today, because we have a brand new poll question every day from the news of the day. I don't follow the oil prices on a regular basis, but just a moment ago, I noticed that the current price of Brent crude is about $92. And I think West Texas Intermediate is around $82 a barrel. Now that's substantially lower. It sounds like the rest of the oil markets are starting to react to some of the news coming out of the Middle East. I mean, Donald Trump has managed to get the Strait of Hormuz open again, despite the best efforts of the Iranians. Even the Iranians now say that the Strait of Hormuz is open. And of course, that means that Starmer and the rest of the, cheese-eating surrender monkeys like Macron of France, they all come out and say, we're joining in on the effort to defend the Strait of Hormuz. Now that it's open, now that the United States has done the heavy lifting, the rest of the Euro trash have decided to say, hey, we're in on this thing now that it's a successful deal. So the Strait of Hormuz is open. Are you confident that Donald Trump's negotiations are going to bring oil prices back down? I would answer that one yes. You can answer it any way you like. You'll find the question at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com, and brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. But let me get back to the fraud and the greedy Democrats, and I'll tell you why I say greedy Democrats. You understand that over the last year or so, we've seen multiple billions of dollars of fraud in one state in particular in America, and that's Minnesota. And a lot of us wondered at the time, well, Minnesota is largely run by Democrats. They have a Democrat governor, a Democrat legislature. I wonder what's happening in Oregon and Washington. Now, you can understand why the Democrats are not anxious to make this a public matter. They want to keep this under wraps as much as they can. So then the question comes, if states like Washington and Oregon got an explicit warning about fraud that was going on involving hundreds of millions of dollars, would they act on it or would they try to keep it secret? I'm going to cite the great reporting of T.J. Martinell, and he's a reporter we've talked to on this show before. He's not on today, but T.J. wrote this great story for the Center Square, and here's the way it begins. A former top federal child protection official in Washington State told the state attorney general's office there is widespread fraud in child care programs, and he did this one day after the current very political Attorney General Nick Brown put out a press release. And what was that press release about? Was it about, let's go out and find all the fraud and make sure that Washington State is not wasting billions of dollars the same way Minnesota is wasting billions of dollars? No. This was Nick Brown, who's about as political as the day is long, the Attorney General who's supposed to go to bat for the people of Washington State. He put out a press release in which he criticized people for looking for examples of significant taxpayer fraud. That is, taxpayer money being obtained through fraudulent means, and the mechanism was daycares. And you know what he wrote? Paul Noske is the former top federal official quoted in T.J. Martinell's story. Fraud is common in programs like child care. He wrote that to the Washington State Assistant Attorney General Spencer Coates. Noske was the Seattle Regional Manager for the Office of Child Care, a federal agency under the Administration for Children and Services. He also wrote that child care fraud is not just committed by a certain population, referring to allegations that a lot of it had to do with Somalis and Somali home-based daycares. He said, it has been my experience there are sometimes language barriers around understanding the complex billing policies and processes. Or it could be that that's a convenient excuse, in my view, to say, we didn't understand the rules. We just thought you put in an application and the state started sending you money. The email concerned Washington State Attorney General Nick Brown's press release on December 30th, in which he said, my office has received outreach from members of the Somali community after reports that daycare providers are being harassed and accused of fraud with little or no fact checking, showing up on somebody's porch, threatening or harassing them is not an investigation. Neither is filming minors who may be in the home. So in other words, Nick Brown, who is the Attorney General of Washington State, is trying to put a shot across the bow of anybody who wants to go out and do what journalists have been able to do. And some of them are amateur journalists who've gone out, Nick Sorter and others, who've gone out in places like Minneapolis, and used an ordinary cell phone camera to out the kind of fraud that most of the legacy media, and I'm talking about the ABC, NBC, CBS affiliates of Seattle, the ABC, NBC, CBS, and Fox affiliates of Portland, they're sitting on their backsides doing nothing. And these amateur journalists go out and they say, how is it that you've got a daycare that's getting millions of dollars, allegedly caring for 100 kids or more, and is being operated out of somebody's mailbox on the front of a tiny apartment? Is that even possible? Fiscal year 2025, the DCYF, that's a state agency, spent $369 million in federal funding, about $300 million in child care funds on monthly child care subsidies. Now, how much of that money is being scammed? And frankly, I don't care if the scam artists are Somali or not. It may be that just like in Minnesota, you had a Somali community that figured out this is a opportunity rife with, or it's a situation rife with opportunities for fraud. Let's go out and scam as many dollars as we can, to the point where they were literally taking suitcases full of money out to the international airport outside of Minneapolis and shipping it out of the country and back to Somalia. Is that same thing happening in Oregon or Washington? We really don't know. Because what happens when top federal officials send a note to the attorney general and say, I think this is happening here. You ought to take a look for it. But people like Nick Brown are more interested in condemning anybody's efforts to find those frauds and turn them off. It is First Amendment Friday. It's the Radio Northwest Network, and I'll be glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. The Northwest Nonsense is coming up next.
This is your home for honestly provocative talk radio. The truth every day. Now, back to the Lars Larson Show.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to say.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense? nonsense?
That great moment every day where Lars brings you the cold, hard facts without any liberal wokeness from the Daily Dead, fish wrapper, or mainstream media bias.
Well, this week, as you may already know, I endorsed Oregon Republican Representative Ed Deal to replace Democrat Tina Kotek as governor. Last night, the four leading Republicans, including Ed Deal, appeared in a debate, and I'm still glad that I chose Deal. All the candidates for Oregon governor have come on this talk show to talk about the issues. I think Christine Drazen and Chris Dudley are good people, but I think they had their shots to lead and they fell short. Representative Deal pulled off something few have ever done, win hundreds of thousands of signatures to immediately, well, when I say immediately, 8 weeks, refer Tina Kotek's $4 billion tax hike to the voters. Democrats then spit on democracy by ripping that vote out of the November election and dumping it into the low turnout May election. Notice Democrats aren't even campaigning in favor of the tax that they worked so hard to pass back in September of last year. Governor Kotek ain't out there either. And notice the labor unions, the ones that usually support any old candidate with a D by her name, have abandoned Tina Kotek. The real race happens 1 month and 2 days from today, when voters make the only choice allowed to them, choose a Republican to replace Tina Kotek. Failed leadership. And his name, by the way, is Ed Deal. Glad to be with you on a Friday. Let me give you an update that just came down. Donald Trump just put on social media, in this case Truth Social, he announced on Truth Social that Iran has agreed to transfer what he describes as the nuclear dust, the material that resulted from U.S. airstrikes on Iranian nuclear facilities. He put up a social media post quoted by the Epoch Times that says the USA will get all the nuclear dust created by our great B-2 bombers. No money will exchange hands in any way, shape, or form. He emphasized the agreement does not involve financial compensation and it's separate from developments in Lebanon. Now, consider this. One of the things Trump, I'm sure, is trying to remind people of is that during the great Barack Hussein Obama, the guy who decided to ship airplanes with pallets of money on them to the mad mullahs of Tehran to help finance some of the terrorism they were doing, that was what Obama did. That's not what Donald Trump is doing. Now, our question of the day, brought to you by Multnomah Medical Clinic. No pills, no shots, no surgery, and get better fast at Multnomah Medical Clinic. Steve Ballinger writes, and Lars, I realize that Christine Drazen seems to have all the money, but I do agree with you about Ed Deal. I've heard Christine on your show many times in the past few years. She seems nice enough, but has no verve, no excitement, no passion. She's basically a nothing burger, he writes. Says the same things, but offers no concrete solutions. Says she has fought in the Senate, but from my perspective, she hasn't even been a leader. She seems resigned to the fact that opposition is futile. She caves in on Second Amendment issues, and it was Deal that took charge on Kotek's big tax hike and got it in front of the voters. Where was Drazen? Signed Steve Ballinger. And then this email from Laura. Laura wrote into me, Lars, my husband recently went down to DMV to register our new, used, paid-for-in-cash vehicle and was told that insurance is no longer required to be shown to them. In fact, they told him, we trust you have it. Pretty shocking. I would agree with you, Laura. And now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you
ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Presented by Oregon City Garage Door.
You know, I've been telling you for many years that the liberals in the Pacific Northwest hate the automobile. They have waged war on the automobile for a long time. Consider this. The new mayor of Seattle has said, get ready for summer weekend car bans in Seattle. Here's where they're going to start with it. Katie Wilson, the new socialist mayor of Seattle, has said that they are going to block all use of cars on Lake Washington Boulevard. During the closures, no cars will be able to drive along a major lake roadway. Instead, pedestrian-focused transportation, they say, will be encouraged. Well, if you consider banning cars to be encouraging pedestrianism, yeah, absolutely. Every weekend from Memorial Day through Labor Day, and there will be extended closures around certain summer holidays. Is that a good idea? to tell people who commute the way that 95% of the Pacific Northwest gets around, you're not allowed to bring your car. You have to be on foot or on a bicycle. Otherwise, you're not welcome. She says, this is your city. Yeah, it's your city unless you happen to travel on four wheels, in which case they don't want you around. Now, our best email of the day, you can always send more to talk at LarsLarson.com. John Angievsky writes in, Lars, the man who campaigned against FISA 702, that'd be Trump, has now called for a clean extension, by which he means no SAVE Act added to it on leverage by the feckless Senate Majority Leader, Thune. Speaking of the Iran war, mentions of the Save America Act have dropped off the radar in both legacy media and, more importantly, on social media. Today is First Amendment Friday. Go ahead and read my letter on the air. I'm dunner than done with Trump. Love your show. Disagree with the commander in chief. Signed, John Angievsky. To your calls now. Let's go first to Steve in Bellingham, listening on KGMI. Hey, Steve, welcome to First Amendment Friday. What's on your mind?
Lars, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a bit concerned because I keep hearing all this bravado about the agreement regarding nuclear dust or radioactive dust.
Yeah.
But what happened to all of the enriched uranium that we were supposed to be going after? Is that
I think that's what Trump is referring to. Do you not?
Okay, so the dust is the enhanced uranium.
Well, if you look at when they spin this stuff up in centrifuges, it does not come out as a solid chunk of metal. It is, in fact, dust. In fact, they call the raw ore, before they do any enrichment at all, they call it yellow cake. And then they enrich it. I think Iran got to 60%, which means they were a relatively short jump away from 90% enriched, which would be able to be used in making weapons. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense when you explain it that way. I was just a bit concerned because I keep hearing about this radioactive dust. And quite honestly, I would wonder, what radioactive dust?
Steve, I think Trump is trying to reduce his language down to where even Democrats will understand it. If he says enriched uranium, they may say, I don't know what that is. All I learned in college was activism. And you say, radioactive dust. Oh, I understand that. He's trying to get it down to a Democrat level of talking.
The Lars Larson Show. Show today? Find Lars's thoughts and get the podcast right now at LarsLarson.com. Now, here's Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the program. It's First Amendment Friday. It's a pleasure to be with you live on the Radio Northwest Network, and always glad to get to your calls. And we'll get to that in a moment at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk at LarsLarson.com. I want to talk, though, about something that's going on. The Daily Dead Fish Wrapper, in this case, the Oregonian, or OregonLive.com, because the physical paper doesn't really exist anymore, they have published something, and here's what the argument is. They say, we've got criminals who owe over $1 billion in unpaid fines and fees because of the crimes they committed. And you'd expect to say, well, let's go out and collect those monies. No, instead, the fish wrapper is arguing that the psychological pressure of owing all that money, all those criminals out there who owe a fine here and a fine there and compensation and everything else, that this is putting so much psychic pressure on the criminals that they're having a difficult time with their lives. They're feeling very verklempt, or whatever it is that they're saying. So I thought I'd ask our friend Josh Marquis about that, assistant to the district attorney of Linn County. So he's carefully on his lunch hour, off the property, outside the courthouse. He's done all the things to make sure he doesn't get his boss in trouble. Josh, what should we make of this argument from the loons at the fish wrapper that somehow the psychic pressure of owing fines and fees because you committed crimes against people is making it difficult for these people to recover?
Well, what's even more outrageous to me is once upon a time, the Oregonian was a real newspaper. And this is just further evidence that it's not. This is actually not even an Oregonian reporter. It's some outfit that is a some sort of, you know, online paper that does advocacy. In any event, they published this so-called report, very, very glossy. And it basically says, oh, there's $1 billion offered. And we just can't do this because people just keep getting in trouble. Well, let's know a couple of things. One, as the report says, judges are free to just waive these, and most of the time do. And so most of the time, we're not talking about fines. We're talking about restitution. Restitution means what the judge hands down in a courtroom after someone's A, convicted of a crime, B, had their own lawyer object to why they can't pay or shouldn't pay. And it's actually reimbursing victims who have a measurable loss, i.e. their car was trashed, or they had thousands of dollars of hospital bills or other things as the direct result of a crime. We're not generally talking about fines that go to the state of Oregon. And in fact, one of the many things this quote report doesn't talk about is that in many cases, victims' services provided throughout the state by either DAs or counties are funded almost entirely by what are called fines and assessments. And if the judges don't assess them, the money doesn't exist. But what's more outrageous about this is it's a so-called study, but it basically talks about what the Germans do, which I have a hard time understanding, or what happened in Ferguson, Missouri in 2014. Now, for those of you who might have forgotten, that was
hands
the,
up, don't shoot Michael Brown, who assaulted a cop twice
Brown,
and got shot to death for his trouble, right?
Well, he was a thug who had just robbed a place, and he attacked a Ferguson police officer. And even though the Obama administration really wanted to prosecute, even they had to concede after a federal Justice Department investigation that the officer was justified. So that was nonsense. And then what's even more amazing in this study, and I actually read it, it's about 10. Actually, the executive summary is 10 pages. The whole thing is like 70. It's all anecdotal, Lars. They don't ever quote a single judge, a single DA, or even a single defendant by name. In other words, there's no way to assess the credibility or truthfulness of anything in it. And the terrifying part is, I'll bet you the legislature uses this next session to further make it difficult to collect fees.
I'm talking to Josh Marquis, who's the former DA in Clatsop County, now working as second man. I think he's shining the shoes of all the lawyers in Linn County right now. So they're going to have him. What are the fascinating? Can you say what fascinating cases they put you on yet? Is it parking tickets?
Yeah, I've got a couple murder cases, and then I do. I also have, bread and butter assaults and everything down to drunk driving. I'm doing, the stuff that actually I missed prosecuting when I was an elected official for 25 years.
He's the full service prosecutor, and he gets to do this. And it sounds like it was Martini, isn't it?
Doug Martini, great guy, a right-thinking American, and this is Linn County, which is not like much of Oregon. Or at least Western Oregon.
No, but he's going to get his money's worth out of you. He's going to say, if I'm paying Josh to do this, we're going to have him do some murders and stuff like that. So tell me
this. That makes sense, yeah. That's what I've been doing for 30 years.
Do you think there's any case to be made that somehow finding, because to me, the least a criminal should expect to do is pay some money to compensate the victim. Even if the victim said, I had to go to the emergency room, I was there for 15 hours, I had a copay to pay, I missed work the next day. At the very least, victims of crimes ought to get some of that back, shouldn't they? Do they routinely get it back, or do they routinely get denied by this system that this report condemns?
They routinely get denied by the system. I've worked in that system for over 40 years. It's been very, very difficult to hammer money out. We pay, hundreds of millions of dollars for court-appointed attorneys. We recover less than 1% of that. And we're not talking about from people who were not found guilty. We're talking about people who were found guilty of felonies. And in many cases, we're talking about restitution, not fines. So we're not talking about money that is just arbitrarily fined against someone who is, say, convicted of a, let's say, run-of-the-mill case, maybe not murder or, rape, but theft. But the irony is, that some of the worst injustices happen when just ordinary working victims are deprived of their property and they don't have, say, insurance to cover, for example, if you don't have comprehensive on your car, if some junkie comes in and steals it and wrecks it, you're not going to get compensated.
I mean, let's say you work in construction and you have even a few $100s, usually it's a few $1,000s worth of tools that are in your vehicle, and your vehicle disappears and the tools get pawned off, and all of a sudden you may be denied the ability to make a living. I think that criminal ought to be paying a lot of money to that victim.
Well, they're not, and what we try to do is as prosecutors and some judges is to at least, you know, say, okay, well, you're probably not going to go to jail, or you're going to go to jail for just a day or two, but you're at least going to pay restitution. This advocates for abolishing all fines, all restitution, because, of course, you know, this is an underserved population. They quote somebody from Medford saying, oh, well, these people are overwhelmingly people of color, so as if that should be some excuse for not paying.
Does it matter? And by the way, Josh, when they say it makes it harder to pursue rehab, the fact that these people have to pay fines, I would think that if you had to pay fines every month, you said, yeah, I got to pay $200 a month to compensate my victim, that doing that for a few years might actually be a better rehabilitation than all the group therapy in the world. That's Josh Marquis. Back in a moment. It's First Amendment Friday.
Lars Larson wants to hear from you, even if you disagree. Naysayers get to cut the line at 866-HEY-LARS. Now, here's Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. And in a moment, I want to tell you about something going on in Seattle. They finally decided to start enforcing fares for people who ride mass transit. Now, that means both the trains and the buses. Only the thing is, they hire 30 people to enforce the fares, and then they don't actually do the job. But let me get to that in just a moment. First, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. On a First Amendment Friday, every subject is fair game. And, of course, every call is welcome, too. And naysayers go right to the head of the line at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@larslarson.com. And you can vote in our poll on X. The poll on X, the Strait of Hormuz. Open. Are you confident Trump's negotiations will bring oil prices back down? I would answer that one yes, and it appears that oil prices are already on their way back down, but they need to stay down as well, and that will probably translate into pump prices in a few weeks. Today's poll on X can be found at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com, brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Now, this email from Dan, who writes in, Dan Whitmore. He said, Lars, I feel like you may have chose the wrong governor candidate. Referendum Ed, he's talking about Ed Deal, is not the candidate you think he is. What has he done except introduce the gas tax referendum, and he's in the process of introducing another one? Well, he did more than that. Anybody can go out and propose a ballot measure. The tough thing is gathering the signatures necessary to put it on the ballot, which Ed Deal and Jason Williams and a couple of other people, they're the ones who made that happen last fall. And they did it in about 38 days, gathering more than 250,000 signatures. So if you're saying you just think he introduced a referendum, no, he got it referred to the ballot, and he got it with about 2.5 times the number of signatures required. Not everybody ends up doing that. He says he helped implement the paddleboard raft permit, which to me is a ridiculous tax on those who chose to paddleboard raft or anything else. He also had the opportunity to walk out with other representatives to stop the gas tax from being moved from November to May. Sorry, but there are other things I believe that will come to light about Ed Deal before the primary. Well, the primary is in 1 month and 2 days, so time's a-wasting. And by the way, The fact that it's in 1 month and 2 days, but the ballots start going out in about 10 days because they go out about 3 weeks before the election. The election is going to happen on the 19th of May. It is now the 17th of April. Not much time left. He said, needless to say, my choice is Danielle Bethel for governor. I feel she knocked it out of the park in last night's debate. I hope she'll get the opportunity to truly debate referendum Ed. And I'm glad to have her on. Danielle Bethel's been on this program. We will have all of the candidates on again, including people like Christine Drazen and others, even though I have made my choice, because I've told people when somebody asks me, well, who do you think ought to be the next governor of Oregon? I say, well, number one, I'm not an Oregon resident and I'm not an Oregon voter, but I'll be glad to tell you my opinion. I mean, how worthless is a talk show host who doesn't have an opinion? Now, if there are subjects on which I don't know enough about the subject to have an opinion, I'm glad to tell you that. And I got this email from Bonnie. Lars Drazen voted for cap and trade, celebrated the conviction of the police officer present when George Floyd died from an overdose. She also supported feminine protection products in boys' bathrooms. She's not a conservative. She's a politician, first, last, and always, as she and Kamala need to go away. Yeah, well, there's that, too. And then this, John, in Lakewood, Washington. Lars, I heard you mention how NATO suddenly wants help out in the Strait of Hormuz. Although we in Israel took all the risk and did all the heavy lifting, I think the NATO's help in the Strait is fine as long as any benefits arising out of the victory over Iran go first to the U.S. and Israel. This is a great opportunity for NATO to pay Israel and the U.S. back, as well as renew cooperation with us. And John, I couldn't agree with you more, and I appreciate it. By the way, a few minutes ago, we found out that President Trump had announced that Iran has now agreed to give up what President Trump calls the nuclear dust that was created when we pretty well smashed their nuclear program into that big hole in the mountain. Now, about those buses and light rail, here's a fact. When people complain about how much it costs to ride on mass transit, do you understand that the average person riding, whether it's Metro and Sound Transit in Seattle or Max and TriMet in the Portland metro area, the riders are paying about 12 cents of the operating cost and none of the capital cost. So they're not paying for the trains, they're not paying for the track, they're not paying for the buses. And of the cost of fuel and driver and everything else that goes into running a transit operation, they're paying about $1 in nine. That's how much they're paying. So the transit agencies, and I'm going to play a segment from a Como TV news report. I wish I had the reporter's name. I don't. But he's talking about the fact that they decided to hire 30 fare enforcement officers to get on mass transit, and listen to the terrible results they produced.
Are you paying your fare when you get on the bus in King County? A lot of riders aren't. And we now know the results of the first 10 months since Metro started enforcing fares. During that time, their 30 fare enforcement officers, they wrote 8 citations. That's right, 8 between those 30 officers. Now, they did give 2,000 warnings out to riders who were caught on the bus without paying their fare.
Now, the fact that they gave out 2,000 warnings would suggest to me that means there are an awful lot of people who are not bothering to pay for the privilege of riding on mass transit. And when the taxpayers of the state of Oregon, taxpayers of the state of Washington, in this case, are paying 100% of the capital costs, and that's for light rail that sometimes costs up to $1 billion a mile to build the rails. That's the cost of the newest one that will go across the interstate bridge. $1 billion a mile, and then tens of millions of dollars for all the train cars, and then you have to pay for the electricity, and it's considerable. You have to pay for the drivers who operate those trains. In the case of buses, the electric buses are almost $1 million apiece. The diesel buses are about half as much money, and they pay good money to the people who drive them. And the riders are only paying 12 cents on every dollar of the operating costs and none of the capital costs. And then when they put fare enforcement people on, they spend 10 months writing 2,000 warnings, and they only write 8 tickets in 10 months. They're not even trying to collect the money. This segment of the show brought to you by 540training.com, concealed carry home invasion defense and personal defense. Find them online at 540training.com. You're listening to the Radio Northwest Network and the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show.
First Amendment Friday on the Lars Larson Show.
Friday is for everybody.
Today, Lars puts you in the driver's seat. You talk about what you want to talk about.
Government is the problem.
No topic is off limits.
It looks like the Canadians are here.
Call 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-HEY-LARS.
Thank goodness it's Friday. Happy Friday.
This is
First Amendment Friday with Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on a First Amendment Friday. I want to raise this question, and it has to do with what the purpose of government is. And I think simply stated, the purpose of our national government is the national security of the United States of America. I mean, before you get to anything else, the CDC or national parks or Department of Interior, before you get to any of that, it's national security. And at the local level, meaning the state, city, and county level, the number one purpose is public safety. Now, you can sum that up as cops, sheriffs, medical help, and putting out fires. That's just for starters. Get that right. In fact, get that really right, and you've done about 90% of what the public expects of you before you've opened up a single public park or had a DEI conference or any of the rest of that garbage. So when you have major cities, and there are two in the Northwest, Seattle and Portland, that have done a lousy job of providing enough police officers to actually get the job done. Portland now ranks, for example, 47th out of 50 major cities in police officers per capita, and I believe it shows. And one of the people who knows it better than I do is Kevin Neely, executive director of the Oregon Criminal Justice Truth Project. Kevin, welcome back to the program. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing well, but I'd be doing a lot better if major cities in the Northwest actually staffed their policing adequately. And one of the things I always point out to people, I don't have the exact math in front of me, but I'm going to be close. The city of Portland has an annual budget over $8 billion, and they spend well less than one-tenth of that amount on policing and public safety. Now, what does that say about the priorities of the city of Portland if the number one job of local government, which is not DEI and it's not public parks or anything else, it's public safety, and they spend less than a tenth of their budget on it?
Well, we couldn't agree with you more. It should be the number one priority. It has been the number one priority in the past, and it needs to be the number one priority moving forward. And I think you've really hit the nail on the head. If our community isn't spending money on cops, our livability is going downhill fast.
Yep. Well, and in fact, you can see that all over. I mean, it's not just downtown Portland, but downtown Portland ought to be the shining example of this represents the city. And yet downtown real estate, the big buildings down there, because people have stopped going there and businesses have been fleeing, the value is down, what is it, 70% in the last few years? So somebody who bought a $10 million building about a decade ago now has a $3 million building, and they can't find tenants to take. I mean, that just sounds like the kind of, you know, crash that you see after a war.
Yeah, it is just a fall from grace, isn't it? And yep. At that exact same time, we've seen this disinvestment in our police. And that's what we're really trying to highlight in this report is, listen, here's what happens. If you don't pay to have safe streets, the livability is going to go down, and the economic vitality, particularly of your central city, is going to collapse. And there's probably no better example than some of those cities here in the Pacific Northwest.
Now, I cited that number that came out of your report, the Oregon Criminal Justice Truth Project, 47th out of 50. Do you happen to know where Seattle ranks in there by any chance?
Yeah, I sure do. It's just a few short steps ahead of us. They, too, are here in the bottom 10 with us. Seattle, it looks to me like, is, I'll give you a sense. The bottom here, we've got Seattle, Minneapolis, San Diego, Portland. It's pretty good company we're with right now in the Portland area, isn't it?
All the usual suspects, isn't it? So how do we get that changed, especially when you've got in Portland, both Portland and Seattle, you've got a mayor in Seattle who's a socialist, doesn't sound like she believes in policing. You've got a socialist city council of 12 in Portland and a feckless mayor who doesn't seem to care because You know, there's a story about him right now in the paper that he goes out on weekends and picks up trash and things like that. But his job was not to run the soup kitchen. His job was to run an $8 billion enterprise. And it sounds like he doesn't have the first clue how to do it.
Well, we sure hope when his budget comes out here in the near future that it protects and preserves the police officers that we do have. But no doubt about it, right? This commission is going to have to, you know, they're going to have to invest some money here. And if they don't invest money in our police, I think it's probably going to end up falling back to the public, unfortunately. And that's not where we should be, but it might be where we are.
Well, and Kevin, one of the things I wonder about is, are you putting individual citizens in the position where when they know that calling 911 means you might get help in a certain period of time, but it's going to be a long period of time, you're basically telling citizens you're on your own. So act on your own behalf, because otherwise you may end up being dead or in the hospital. And I think when people act on their own behalf, instead of, I mean, I'm not faulting it. I'm saying if that's the only choice you got, then go ahead and take those actions. But it sounds to me like that's going to leave a whole lot more dead or dying criminals out there. And maybe that's what we need.
Well, you know, there's two ways to reduce crime in your communities. Way one is to have more prosecutions. Way two is to have more police officers. And if you err on the side of more police officers, that means you're preventing crime. You just hit the nail on the head. That ought to be our goal. Back when we had over 1,000 police officers in the Portland metro area, the response time on 911 calls was 5 to 8 minutes. Today, you could be waiting 30 minutes before you get a response. That's not the fault of our police departments. They're doing their absolute best. The problem is that our communities are not adequately funding our cops, and that's what needs to change.
Yeah, and all I'm suggesting in giving the numbers at the beginning, when you're spending less than 10%, what's the total police budget now? About $300 million or less?
And that's right. It's right around 300. That's right.
So if you added the police department, the fire department, and then even added in the component that is provided by the private sector for medical response, you'd still be less than $800 million, which would be 1/10 of the budget. And if you say, well, if you're spending less than 1/10 on public safety, what are you spending the other 9/10 on? And I think the answer is generally stuff. You know, they're spending it on stuff. Are they keeping up with parks? No. Are they keeping up with other infrastructure? No. You know, water, sewer? No. How about roads? No. So where the heck is the money going, Kevin? Do you have any idea?
Boy, we haven't done that examination, but I'm sure smarter people than I have. And you know, the one thing we do know is it's not going to the police department. It's yeah. not going to invest in that foundational need of our community, public safety, right? People just want to be safe before any of those other things come into play. It's really about creating a safe environment for us to thrive. We just don't have that right now in too many parts of our city and, frankly, in too many parts of the Pacific Northwest.
You know, I'm just convinced that with $8 billion plus out there in the city's annual budget, you could divert $100 million to more cops and take it away from whatever, you know, woke, fuzzy thing that they've allocated it to. And probably most people wouldn't give a damn, but they'd be very glad that when you call 911, you get quick response from a cop. That's Kevin Neely, who's director of the Oregon Criminal Justice Truth Project. Back in a moment. You've got the Lars Larson Show.
OregonGunLaw.com.
If you don't want to talk but want to be heard, email Lars at talk@LarsLarson.com. He actually will read it. Now, here's Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's First Amendment Friday, and your phone calls and emails are welcome. Every single week, we celebrate your First Amendment right to sound off on whatever subject you want to talk about. Now, I've got one I want to put in front of you. And it's an argument I want to make about something that should be done that is not being done well right now. But then that's kind of typical of the kinds of things we talk about on this program, whether it's national, whether it's Northwest, whether it's local. The fact is that we want to have performance out of government. Government demands a lot from citizens. The very least citizens can ask in return is that government actually delivers on what it promises to do. But I want to hear your calls as well. If you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. If you're a naysayer, we always put naysayers to the head of the line, have done that for almost 30 years. We're very close to 30 years now, and always will as long as I have anything to say about it. You can send emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. You can vote in our poll on X. The poll on X can be found at Lars Larson Show on X. You can also find it on my website at LarsLarson.com. Now, consider this. When various cities decide to give the police in their city their marching orders, do they do it to achieve a certain political outcome, or do they do it to serve the best interests of the people who live in that city? I'm going to tell you about an indictment that's been suggested by the president of the Seattle Police Officers Guild, who came out this week and he said the city is blocking its officers from cooperating with federal immigration agents and that that very action may put the public in jeopardy. His name is Kent Lux. He did an interview with a journalistic organization, the Center Square, that I trust a lot. And he said the city's plan makes police officers reluctant to separate protesters at various events and keep them a reasonable distance away from ICE officers who are engaged in enforcement actions. Now, I know that some of you are going to say, Lars, you're going to have to talk about Alex Pretty and Renee Good. And I'd be happy to talk about them. They're both dead. They are both dead because they both decided to get in the way of law enforcement. And when I say that, I say any citizen has a right to go out and exercise your First Amendment freedom. You know, you want to give a speech, you want to shout into a bullhorn, you want to publish a, you know, newsletter, you want to do any of that, great. If you want to go out and interfere with police officers, no matter which agency they work for, they could be from your local police department. They could be from the sheriff's department. They could be federal marshals. They could be ICE, Immigrations and Customs Enforcement. So what happened in Minneapolis? Because this is what Kent Lux in Seattle is talking about. He's saying that Seattle's plan is very similar to the plan they had in place in Minneapolis, where two people got killed. Now, there were politicians in America. They will make Alex Pretty and Renee Good's death. They will try to make hay out of that forever. They should be ashamed of themselves. Because those two died, not because they were exercising their First Amendment freedoms, but because they interfered with the police, which is illegal everywhere in America. There's a reason that if I've even been driving down the street and occasionally seen a cop that I know. And he's in the middle of, you know, putting handcuffs on somebody. He's doing an arrest. Do I stop and shout and say, hey, buddy, how are you? No, I don't get in his way. I don't even try to distract him. And why? Because when you get in the way of the cops as they're doing the job, you are committing a crime. So what Lux says is he says, so what happened when you sideline the officers that you've allowed the demonstrators, these protesters, to make direct contact with the ICE agents, and the ICE agents reacted. When Renee Good tried to drive a 4,000-pound automobile over an ICE agent, he pulled his gun out in the fraction of a second, he shot, and he killed her. And what Kent Lux says is, that's why two people are dead, because it was between the protesters and ICE. He said ICE agents are not trained in crowd control, police are. But he said what the Seattle City Council, city government has done, he said they've created this feud with the federal government, and the Seattle Police Officers Guild gets put right in the middle of it. They've said you are not allowed to keep the protesters back from what the ICE agents are doing. And he says that action is going to put people's lives in jeopardy. And you can understand why. Did you hear about any other people who were killed in incidents involving ICE other than Alex Preddy in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and Renee Good in Minneapolis, Minnesota? Notice the pattern? You didn't hear about deaths elsewhere. And you especially, you didn't even hear about trouble when you had red cities around America where the local cops, even if their city council had said, we don't want you to help the ICE agents, but you can keep all the yahoos and the protesters from getting in their way. When you had cities like that, you ended up with ICE able to do its job, protesters able to do their protesting, but held back from interfering with a law enforcement agency. If you do that, you are going to save people from ending up dead. That's the bottom line. And the sad thing is, this guy's right. I mean, Kent Lux is speaking on behalf of the Seattle Police Officers Guild. He's saying if the city decides to go this direction, we already know what's going to happen. We've already seen what's going to happen because it happened in Minneapolis, Minnesota. People ended up dead because you allowed a confrontation. I mean, look, this game has been played by liberal politicians forever. They did it in Charlottesville, Virginia, and a woman ended up dead. The city council decided we don't like these groups. We're going to schedule them to have their protests in the same park on the same day at the same time. When politicians do that, they are deliberately causing a collision that they know is going to, at the very least, end up with somebody hurt and likely end up with somebody dead. And I think when politicians do that, they should be called out. They should be called on it and say, you created the circumstances that led to this young woman being dead. In the case of Alex Preddy and Renee Good, the public officials of Minneapolis should have been called out. Instead, the mainstream media wanted to blame ICE. And why? Because ICE is one of Donald Trump's agencies, and the mainstream media has decided anything Donald Trump does is absolutely evil. Back in a moment. It's First Amendment Friday. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show. Podcasts, local and national news. Get it all at LarsLarson.com. Now, back to the Lars Larson Show.
You know, welcome back to the program. One of the best things about having this program is that I don't have to be the smartest person in the room. I just have to know how to get the smart people into the room. And I want to tell you something. About a year ago, I first read some of the stories that started to wonder out loud, where did all of these top scientists go? Right now, 10 scientists that have been tied to America's nuclear and aerospace programs are either dead or missing. Is it all just a giant coincidence, or is it something far more alarming than that? On that note, I want to welcome Nancy Liu, who's News Nation's national correspondent. Nancy, welcome back to the program. How are you?
Thanks for having me, Lars. This is quite a mystery, and so many people are wondering.
Does anybody have a great theory as to where these people have gone? Did they all do John Galt and they've all disappeared?
Who knows?
Atlas Shrugged or
you've
what?
You mentioned it's 10 people. It's possibly 11 now. There's now speculation about a suicide in 2022. But this has the attention of President Trump, who, you know, yesterday commented and said, you know, we are going to look into this. Hopefully we'll have answers in a week and a half. And today the White House, again, issuing a statement saying they are actively looking into this. Because so many people wonder, it's, you know, 10 top scientists. It's too many to be a coincidence. But I mentioned this 11th case that people are wondering about.
Is that Jason Thomas from December of last year?
No, this is Amy Eskridge from 2022. Her death was ruled a suicide, just 34 years old. But, you know, she died of a self-inflicted gunshot. But a lot of people have always questioned that because at the time, She was expressing that her life was in danger because she was working on anti-gravity technology. She founded a research company called the Institute for Exotic Science, and she wanted a more public space for people to talk about developments in anti-gravity work. And her father, who is alive, he is a NASA engineer, retired NASA engineer. He's worked on all kinds of projects, and he did novel work on a system to propel spacecraft with high-speed plasmoids, and she worked closely with her father.
Hold on, Nancy. High-speed what? Plasmoids?
Plasmoids.
Okay.
Plasma. Remember we heard about plasma. As the space capsule came back last Friday. So we've been hearing about plasma. Well, I did speak with Richard Eskridge this morning. He is saying that his daughter did commit suicide. He doesn't find it suspicious. He doesn't think that she is linked to the 10 missing and dead scientists. But, you know, she did work with, you know, secrets and, you know, technology linked to military defense, UFOs. So a lot of people are wondering, but you've mentioned all scientists missing or dead. Now, Richard Eskridge said with Amy, scientists die also just like other people. So he doesn't think her death is suspicious. But the 10 members, all kinds of conspiracy theories, they abound. People want answers, especially when it comes to General William McCasland, because he's the so-called UFO gatekeeper. And he went missing mysteriously just 2 months ago. And that was months after, you know, someone who worked for him, Monica Reza.
Monica Reza,
She went missing during a hike, and she was an experienced hiker. So, and she was with friends who turned around, and she was gone. So, and there have been no remains found. She remains missing. It's an active case with the L.A. Sheriff's Department. So,
well, and Nancy, what's odd about that is, look, I used to do a lot of hiking as well. But if you're with friends and they turn around and you're gone, they've at least narrowed down the place where you could have disappeared to a fairly small area. We're not talking about, well, he went hiking in this wilderness and he's somewhere in there, or she's somewhere in there. She disappeared between the last time they saw her and then when they turned around and she was gone. And there also seems to be a real connection to JPL, the Jet Propulsion Laboratory. A lot of the disappearances link back to that, don't they?
JPL, Los Alamos, NASA, and, you know, the friends that she was with that day, this is Angeles National Forest, they're also experienced hikers. So it certainly makes you wonder, like, how, you know, experienced hikers, this could suddenly happen, that somebody could just disappear. But as I mentioned earlier, the president, this has his attention. He's acknowledged this mystery. He wants a top-level review. Today, you know, the White House indicating that relevant agencies and the FBI are on it. We also reached out today to Republican Congressman Eric Burleson. He's been really actively pushing for answers to all of this. And he sent us a statement and he said, you know, these are advanced scientists and researchers working on really critical national security stuff. And he finds it mysterious that they've disappeared.
And by the way, Nancy, one of the things I noticed is most of these are not terribly old. I mean, you've got Michael Hicks, who's 59. But you've got a number of people who are, these are not aging people. There's a 48-year-old Steve Garcia. These are, you know, middle-aged people, right?
Yeah. Monica Reza, in her 60s and quite vibrant and healthy. There's a lot to wonder about. So hopefully now that, you know, there's high-level attention on this, we'll get some answers. But could it all be a coincidence?
I don't know. It sounds really strange to have all these people that all just seem to disappear And one of them, yep. Garcia especially, who left out of Albuquerque, the ABQ, and he was on foot, had a handgun.
Yeah.
And they said, the police said he may have been a danger to himself. Well, I don't know where that came from. But the bottom line is, you'll wonder where all these scientists went. Nancy, thank you very much. We're going to have Nancy Liu back from News Nation. She is one of their national correspondents for News Nation. And the question is, 10 scientists have died or disappeared. All of them have links to America's nuclear programs. They've raised questions about possible connections. And now President Trump has said he's interested in getting to the bottom of this, and he wants to know what's going on. He expects to know more in about a week or a week and a half. He said he hopes the links between the cases are just a coincidence, but they could be something more. It's First Amendment Friday. Your calls are welcome at 866-HEY-LARS. Send emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network.
If joy to building a better world together. From tackling climate change in Mexico to keeping kids healthy in Kenya. From sustainable farming in the Philippines to education in Kosovo. We learn more, give more, share freely, and serve boldly. Are you ready to tackle the tough stuff? To go the distance to make a difference? Then we have a place where you belong. Join us at PeaceCorps.gov.
When you struggle with Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis, you get used to not feeling 100%. I thought that was how it had to be. Until I discovered the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation. They told me about new medications that weren't around back when I was diagnosed. They helped me find a specialist who gave me a new treatment plan. I'm feeling better than I ever thought I could. Don't settle for not feeling your best. Take action today to take care of yourself. Spill Your Guts. Learn more at spillyourguts.org.
If you're surrounded by Northwest liberals,
I cannot stand these morons any longer. If you don't come with me this instant, I shall run amok.
Come to the place where common sense prevails, the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'm glad to get your phone calls and emails. This segment of the show is brought to you by NickShivers.com. If you're ready to stop being a landlord, My Rocket Listing lets you sell your investment property guaranteed, even with non-paying tenants. Just go to NickShivers.com. That's NickShivers.com. And our poll on X today, the Strait of Hormuz is open. Donald Trump says it's open. Iran says it's open. Are you confident that Trump's negotiations will bring oil prices back down? I would say yes. And I will have to admit there's a little bit of a trick to that question. I didn't realize it when I wrote the question earlier today, but oil prices are already coming down. And in fact, I had one gentleman say, I passed the gas station this morning about 8 hours ago, and between then and now, the price of gas has come down 10 cents. So it'll be interesting to see just how fast the marketplace responds. But Strait of Hormuz is open. Are you confident in Donald Trump's negotiations to bring oil prices back down? Today's poll on X is brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. Let's go to Theodore the naysayer. Hey, Theodore, welcome to the program. What do you and I disagree about that makes
Larson,
you a naysayer?
The deal is, understand any of this chess game. Let me give you 2 points because you struggle with these ideas. Mr. Trump or the Prez, Donald, he doesn't work for America. He's not Make America Great Again, and he's not America First. He works for the Israelis, and he works for American Jews. That's why we are over there doing that. It's really not any of our business. Number two, the reason that you're struggling with the DEI, why do they not do the police and all this stuff? The Democrats and basically the national government of the United States is committed to replacing the white population. And there's a lot more crime out there than we're led to believe. And the
okay,
deal
let
is,
me ask you a couple of questions. As I always say, I want to ask you a couple of questions in aid
do
of an
I get
objection.
Do I get
Theodore, no, you don't, because you're just going
to
rattle on forever.
So we don't have
when
free
you tell
speech.
Me it's when you tell
you
me
you have free speech on a show. When,
you do, and you got a chance to
no,
sound off
don't.
On your
you don't
two
even
points.
Get to give
what
two
what's
ideas.
The other point you want to make, and then I want to ask you a couple of questions,
the
and
point
I want an answer.
Is, they don't want their people deported. We just have $250,000 worth of timber trespass, and the sheriff won't do a darn thing about it.
Now you're bringing
you know
up
why?
Something entirely
was,
different. Hey,
it was
Theodore,
done by
Theodore,
Hispanics.
Otherwise, I'm going to let you go.
And they don't want...
Okay. At some point, you can't tolerate Theodore. He says it's none of our business if Iran, which has threatened to kill or to wipe out the United States... For the last 50 years, once a week at least, they announce death to America, death to Israel. Now, Theodore's idea is that the only reason to go after Iran is because of the Jews. Well, you know, Theodore, I don't think that excuse works. If Iran gets nuclear weapons, no matter what happens to Israel, if they threaten to exterminate the United States of America, I think that when people threaten to kill you, you should probably pay attention to those threats. That's number one. So if they're trying to get nuclear weapons, it is our business. If they're trying to get intercontinental ballistic missiles, it is our business. And unfortunately, Theodore seems to think it's none of our business and that we must be doing this only because Donald Trump is somehow, you know, he's just following orders from Jerusalem. I don't think that's the case, but you know, that's Theodore. So what do you expect out of an ace here? But Theodore, if you're going to bring up four or five or six subjects, I just need the time to ask you a couple of questions. Now, I want to tell you about something good that just happened. Idaho just cut off the teachers' unions from using the public payroll system to collect the union dues. Now, if some of you say, well, hold on a second, the union is a private organization. Why do they get to use a public payroll system to collect their dues? And the answer is because governments have been very, very friendly toward unions. Now, if you ask me, do Americans have a right to form a union? They do. I think it's a constitutional right, freedom of association, so that you can go out and negotiate collectively for whatever it is you're going to get paid in your job. That's a constitutional right. What you don't have a right to do is have the government collect the dues for the union. Should taxpayers be doing the billing work for a private political organization called labor union? Idaho Governor Brad Little has just signed a law into effect. It was passed by their legislature, and it tells the public schools you can't use taxpayer-funded resources to support the teachers' unions. That includes barring school districts from setting up payroll deductions for union dues. Now, the unions love this, because if they had to send a separate bill to every member, I think they'd have a tough time actually collecting the dues that they're owed. But that's not my problem. A union is a private organization. Supporters argue that using public payroll systems and staff time to collect dues amounts to indirect taxpayer support, a subsidy that is not available to any other private advocacy group. I mean, if I went to my boss in a private company and said, hey, I'd like people to join the NRA. And he said, fine, they can join the NRA if they want to. Yeah, but I'd like the company to protect or collect their dues for joining the NRA. I'd like you to do that for me. Can you imagine what a private company would tell you? And yet in government, for whatever reason, we have decided to be so warm and friendly toward unions that the government says, yeah, that payroll system is actually owned by the taxpayers. It is paid for by the taxpayers. It should be answering the needs of the taxpayers. But sure, we can put the publicly funded payroll system that is owned by the taxpayers to work collecting private union dues that are used to for political purposes. Well, fact is, Max Nelson of the Freedom Foundation says government shouldn't be picking winners and losers in political debates. Well, the Idaho Education Association, they're not happy about it at all. They're calling the bill a deliberate misrepresentation of the ability to organize and be represented by a labor union. Hey, have all the unions you want, collect your own dues. That's not the taxpayer's job. It's First Amendment Friday, and you're listening to the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show. First Amendment Friday on the Lars Larson Show.
Friday is for everybody.
Today, Lars puts you in the driver's seat. You talk about what you want to talk about.
Government is the problem.
No topic is off limits.
It looks like the Canadians are here.
Call 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-HEY-LARS.
Thank goodness it's Friday. Happy Friday. This is
First Amendment Friday with Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. And this next story takes a little bit of explanation. So in the state of Oregon, they pass all kinds of crazy laws. I mean, they've got laws on doctor-assisted suicide and medical pot and everything else. But one of the craziest laws passed about 9 years ago, so 2017, they said, if you are running an operation and you're going to provide for your employees, you have health insurance coverage for them, you must cover for abortion, you must cover for contraception. And there were, of course, some pro-life groups that said, we don't think we should have to pay for that. And they went to court, and it's taken all these years to actually get what I consider a common sense decision. A federal judge decided on Tuesday, and they sided, or the judge decided, to side with Oregon Right to Life, and said, you're right. That would violate your constitutional rights if the state government of Oregon were to tell you you have to buy abortions, even though you're a pro-life group. Well, I thought I'd get another perspective on that from James Bopp Jr., who's an attorney and owner of the Bopp Law Firm. James, welcome to the program. How are you?
Well, great to be on. Thank you, Lars.
So this one makes perfect sense to me. Is there any reason that, and I'm sure that the state of Oregon will probably want to appeal this, and I'm pretty sure they've already said they're going to appeal this decision. Any reason for the higher courts, meaning the Supreme Court in particular, to say that a state has the right to order a pro-life group to buy abortions for its pro-life employees?
There are several cases decided by the U.S. Supreme Court, starting with Hobby Lobby. Many people have heard of that.
Yep.
And most recently, Catholic Charities, which stand for the proposition that a group that has a sincerely held religious belief and Oregon Right to Life's pro-life views, in multiple statements, in their policies and their bylaws, et cetera, are based upon a Judeo-Christian view of the sanctity of innocent human life. So it's that view is grounded in religion, and that their view that abortion is wrong and that unborn children should be protected from abortion. So to require them to fund a health care plan that provides for abortion for their employees, as the abortion mandate in Oregon does, of course, violates that religious belief. And we've already been one trip to the Ninth Circuit where the Ninth Circuit held quite properly that though that religious view against abortion was sincere and religious, and therefore that they could challenge under the First Amendment the abortion mandate. And the court has said that they, on Tuesday, as you correctly report, will be ruling in favor of Oregon Right to Life, stopping that mandate from being applied to them.
Okay, now let me ask you something about this law. So they wrote an exemption into the law for a religious employer, and I assume they meant something very narrow, like you work for the Catholic Archdiocese or you work for a particular specifically religious organization, like, say, the head office of the Presbyterians or the Lutherans or something like that. but it wasn't broad enough to include a group like Oregon Right to Life?
That's correct. The Constitution protects them, but the Oregon exception was for, quote, religious employers, end of quote, which the state of Oregon described in their pleadings before the court to apply only to, quote, certain churches and religious.
Hold on. Were they suggesting broadly that some churches might qualify for right to life treatment and others might not?
Exactly. That only certain churches have sufficiently government approved religious beliefs and practices that they that their religious free exercise would be protected. Yes. So not only is the religious employer category, which is church or religious orders, very narrow, they don't even think all of those very narrow categories would be qualified for the exemption from the abortion mandate.
I'm talking to James Bob Jr. I just want to give you credit. He's with the Bob Law Firm. So what were they really trying to do here? If the state is just deliberately trying to be provocative and push the line as far as they can and make as many people cover abortion as possible?
Well, it's worse than that. The left is very radical, has taken over the Democrat Party, and they are very hostile to religion and religious practices. And so all over the country, you see this same formulation, that the only time you can exercise your freedom of religion in their mind is in a church, in a worship service. When you walk out of church, you are stripped of your religious free exercise rights under the Constitution, as far as they're concerned.
That's ridiculous.
Yes. And so all of us know that faith guides your entire life.
Yes.
It governs what you do in a church and outside of a church and in your place of employment and in your community and in the public square and as officials of various organizations. It governs your entire life, and you are entitled to exercise your religion unless there's a compelling governmental interest that can be asserted under strict scrutiny to prevent that from happening. And that is very rare, okay? So to your general question, these cases, Catholic Charities and Hobby Lobby established without question. I mean, Hobby Lobby was a for-profit business that could assert their religiously based opposition to funding abortion for their employees.
Yep.
Right? Yep. Catholic Charities, in the mind of the left, doesn't even qualify as a religious organization that is protected by free exercise. So they had to go all the way to the Supreme Court against the New York law because they weren't literally a church or a religious order. So this is a reflection of the extreme hostility of the Democrats captured by the progressive left against religion and wanting to regulate people's religious practices in their everyday life.
That is unbelievable. That is James Bob Jr. He's an attorney, owner of the Bob Law Firm, about the decision by a federal judge who decided on Tuesday that Oregon Right to Life has a right to be exempt from a 2017 law that said if you've got employees, you got to buy them contraception and abortions, even if the very closely held beliefs of your organization contradict them. Back in a moment. It's First Amendment Friday, and you're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Live on KRCW.
Oh,
taxes. What say you, Robin Hood?
So you think you're overtaxed?
Overtaxed, overworked, and paid off with a knife, a club, or a rope?
Why, you speak treason.
Fluently.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's First Amendment Friday. Your calls are welcome at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. On the Radio Northwest Network, Brian writes in, Theodore needs some shock therapy. I have to tell you something. In case you don't know, there's a guy named Theodore. He has a very screechy voice. He calls the show and has been calling as a naysayer for the better part of three decades. And we're still entertained by him. I don't know entirely his entire life story, but apparently he's a graduate of the Oregon Episcopal School. So take that as a warning. If you're wondering where to put your kids for a K through 12 school and you happen to have $30,000 or $40,000 a year to send them to a private school, Oregon Episcopal School has some interesting alumnus, and one of them is Theodore. Let's go to Darren, who's an naysayer. Hey, Darren, it's First Amendment Friday. What do you and I disagree about today?
Well, first off, good Friday to you, Lars. I appreciate you having me on.
You bet.
Earlier this week, you spoke about city council passing or planning on passing a compensation agreement or rule that would dictate that Uber drivers would take 80% of their take, and you didn't like that. Typically, you and I agree on just about everything, but this one, I have a great deal of personal relationship with this from the process going back a few years.
You got a dog in the fight? What's your dog in the fight?
I have a dog. I do have a dog in the fight. I was the chair of the Private for Hire Transportation Advisory Committee, which advises PBOT on all things.
Oh, my
taxi,
God.
Taxi, Uber, Lyft, shuttle, all of those things. Now, I will tell you that PBOT very rarely listens to us. But this one, it's a little bit of
time. Why have citizen advisory committee if you're not going to pay any attention to them? Is it just window dressing?
Well, I will tell you, Lars, we've passed so many things, and I think we've had one thing that has been taken to city council in the last 8 years.
Okay.
And they agree, they say they agree with most of them. So I think it's just bureaucratic red tape.
Okay, but let's go back to Uber just so people understand. Right now, both Uber and Lyft, and I have no financial connection to either company. I don't do ads for them. I've occasionally taken an Uber ride, but I had to pay for it. So it's not like I got anything free. But apparently, both rideshare companies take a margin of about 40%. So I guess in round numbers, if you had a $10 ride, $4 of it is going to go to Uber, to the company for providing the computers and the software and the apps and everything else. And some of it goes to the driver. Some of it goes to other expenses. Why should the City Council of Portland or any government agency decide how much of a margin a private company gets to charge? Tell me why.
Well, first of all, let me correct you on one thing. You know, when we were doing our investigations, we created a subcommittee to look at this.
Okay, but hold on. Darren, if you're going to burn up all the time on details and not get to the point, then nobody's going to get the people listening want to hear what the answer is. So if 40% is not
the
right margin.
Uber takes it's anywhere from 60 to 70% is what Uber's taking
now.
So what? And they change it. For giving the, you know, setting up the ride, basically. The driver is responsible for the car.
But Darren, you're going into a lot of detail. I can go to any company. There are contractors and say, what's your margin? If I go to a department store that sells clothing, they have a margin. Who's the best to set that margin? The competitive marketplace or a bunch of knuckleheads on the 12-member city council?
Well, I will tell you, Lars, you know, for nearly 80 years, Portland has regulated what the taxi industry is allowed to charge. And it wasn't.
And it was dumb, wasn't it?
That changed through.
It was dumb, wasn't it?
I don't know that it necessarily was. Back then there was a lot of options for taxi. Now there's basically two. There's four companies that operate, but two of them have
but
a
can
minimum
I tell, can I tell you something, Darren?
There was 11
the taxi companies are a bad example, and I'll tell you why. Seattle is the same way. Seattle, 30 years ago, had about 700 taxis. That's all the city would allow. And today they have about 700 taxis. What happens when you limit the supply of anything, but the demand for it goes up as the population grows? Then all you've done
is... I agree with with you for
you've
years.
You've awarded a giant monopoly. So don't use the cab companies as an example. I'll go back to my original question. If you're running a private business called Uber or Lyft, who is better to set the margin? Because Uber and Lyft have said, you cut our margins down the way the city council is threatening to do, they may just leave town, and they have done it in other cities.
They've done it once in Austin, and it was a massive failure on their part, and I don't think they will ever do it again. They use that as a threat. I mean, they're great at saying, don't do this, or we'll take our toys and leave, but I don't think that they can do it in Portland.
What did you do? Can you tell me what you did for a living, Darren?
I'll
make it relevant. What did you do for a living?
I used to drive for a cab company.
Okay. And were there nights where you made giant amounts of money?
Oh yeah.
Okay. And absolutely. There were nights where you probably felt like I barely bought lunch tonight, right?
Well, when I drove, it was before Uber was in town, and I always did pretty well.
Okay. So my question is, should somebody have come in and said, Darren's making too much money? We ought to cut his fares in half because he should make a little above minimum wage. Should the government have decided how much money you could make, Darren? Would you have been okay with that?
No, but we're looking at it in a different direction. You know, we're looking at trying to get the drivers a fair wage.
Yeah, hold on. Right, what is a fair wage, Darren, what is a fair wage? Now, were there times where driving a cab you were making $100 an hour?
Yes.
Okay. Is that a fair wage for driving an automobile? It sounds ridiculous to me. It sounds like they were paying you like a brain surgeon back in the day.
I would like to say too, Lars, that there's drivers literally putting their lives on the line. You know, the reason I didn't call earlier this week was
so does the garbage. So does the guy in the garbage truck, but he ain't making these fares. I'm saying to you, you weren't okay with the government regulating how much you made, even though you admit you made a ridiculous amount of money.
The garbage truck drivers are doing pretty well.
$30-$40 an hour, $50 an hour. It's
and,
hard.
And Uber drivers are not making that.
Okay, and you know what?
Should the
government come in and decide? Because when the government has been, do you remember that Nixon had wage and price controls and decided the government will decide how much money you're allowed to make? How did that work out in the 70s?
Lars, you know, I was born in 1970, so I have limited experience when it comes to that.
Well, unfortunately, if you go back and look at the history of it, the government is terrible at deciding how much something should cost. The government knows the value of nothing.
The Lars Larson Show. Disagree with Lars? Great. Naysayers go first at 866-HEY-LARS. Now, back to the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on a First Amendment Friday, and there's a new innovation of the last several weeks, and that is that at least this part of the show is carried live on KRCW. So we're on television. I know it kind of belies the fact that over the last, I don't know, 20 years, I've told people I've got a face for radio, which is why they kicked me out of television. And now, what do you know? They put me back on television. But we love it. I love the feedback I'm getting, and we've got a lot of people who are reacting to the, hey, you're on television. Now, consider this. From email, Brian writes in, Lars, you mentioned DMV. I just got done dealing with DMV for 2 hours. These are the most idiotic and useless and dumb people I've ever dealt with. It's time to fire them all and replace them with robots, not to mention everything we need they farm out to third-party organizations. So what do they do besides mess up all the time? Typical government. I think there are ways to get it done a different way that would probably be a whole lot more useful. And I mentioned that new law in Idaho. I would ask people in Oregon and Washington, ask your state lawmaker, is there any reason to let the labor unions use the state's payroll system to collect their union dues? And you say, is that the case in private companies? And by the way, in private companies, they can do whatever they want. But if you had a worker union at, say, Nike or Boeing or Intel, that private company can do what they want because it's a private company. But is there any argument that somehow collecting union dues on behalf of state employees benefits the public in some way? And Elizabeth New writes in, Lars, thanks for covering this. I've been urging Washington lawmakers to stop collecting dues for unions for the past 3 years. It keeps the workers in the dark about their First Amendment rights. It's also an inappropriate use of public resources. And I want the state to require public employers to engage in awareness efforts. Public employers should be telling employees they have a right to join or not join the union. And she's absolutely right about that. Now, let me go to your calls on this First Amendment Friday. Let's start with Dan. Hey, Dan, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Well, thank you, kind sir. I'm looking for Winston, your dog.
Oh, the studio dog, Winston?
TV.
Yeah, it'd be a little tough because it would mean I would have to pick him up. He weighs well over 100 pounds, and I can pick him up after a fashion, but pick him up and hold him up about 4 or 5 feet in the air so the cameras can see him. I'll tell you what, we'll see if we can get some pictures, and I'll share them with our friends at KRCW and get those on the air, but probably not a live shot of him, not right now. Let's go to Bill in Cottage Grove. Hey, Bill, thanks for listening on the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Well, big guy, you've touched on this before, and it didn't get explained to me in the manner in which I wanted it to. The gas prices that we are experiencing right now,
yep,
are because of the Strait of Hormuz being closed.
Yep. And it
what
just
I don't
got
understand
open.
Is, say it again.
I said it just got reopened.
Correct.
Right.
And what I don't understand is the worldwide amount for a barrel of oil stays $100 because of the Strait of Hormuz being closed.
Yep.
How in the world, and if you could explain this to me as best you can, how in the world does that affect the United States when we produce our own oil to make our fuel? It shouldn't matter what's going on in the rest of the country.
I can tell you why. When you say we, who owns the oil that's in the ground in the United States? Private companies, right?
Correct.
Okay. So you own an oil well and take it out of oil. Make it timber instead. You go out and you're very smart. You buy a bunch of timber. And on the stump, you're told you bought that timber for about $100 per 1,000 board feet. That's the unit they sell timber in, or lumber. You know, when it becomes lumber, but even as timber, say you bought it for $100, 1,000 board feet. And then something happens. A forest burns down, which does happen. And it doesn't burn down here. It burns down somewhere else in the United States. And they say, hey, Bill, that timber you've got that was worth $100 a board foot, I just made it that because it's easier to do the math, it's now worth $200 a board foot because a forest 500 miles from here burned down. Now, Bill, will you still sell it to me for $100 a board foot, or are you going to sell it to me for what the market price of it is?
I sort of get what you're saying, but it
well,
it seems
a barrel
to me
of oil costs the same, other than the different grades, and there is Brent crude, which is one grade, and there's WTI, which is West Texas Intermediate, which is a different grade. But basically, the barrel of oil here, the barrel of oil on the East Coast, the barrel of oil in Japan, the barrel of oil in Australia, they all cost the same amount because the price is set worldwide. And you can understand why it would be. I mean, Bill, if I could buy oil cheap, $10 a barrel cheaper in one country and sell it for $10 a barrel more in another country, would I do that all day long?
Absolutely.
Okay, that's why the price levels out and the price is a worldwide price. So if you say, well, you're pulling the same oil out of the ground, except now it's worth more. Yes, it's worth more because the price has gone up. Have you ever bought gold and silver?
No, sir, I have not.
Okay, but if you owned 10 ounces of silver that you bought about 5 years ago, you would have bought it for about $17 an ounce. Today, it's worth 80-some dollars an ounce. Are you going to sell it for what you bought it for 5 years ago when the price was $17 an ounce, or what the current world market price is?
Well, I absolutely understand that, but
isn't there some way that we, I don't know, maybe through legislation where when situations like this occur, right, okay, I apologize. I get
well, I'm just, like, can I ask you something? What did you do for a living? If you're still working, what do you do for a living?
I'm a welder fabricator.
Oh, okay. What is a good welder who's got the skills you got? What do you make per hour?
A good welder, I would say around here, makes about $30 an hour.
$30. How would you like the government to come in and say, you know, it'd be better for all of us if you could hire that welder for $20 an hour, and we're going to set your rate at $20 an hour? Are you okay with that?
No, they've actually, new guys have come in and they've actually paid them more than the guys that are going to be training them to do the job.
Yeah, and all I'm saying is if you want the government to come in and tell the guy with the oil, you have to sell that oil at a cheap rate, how would you like somebody to tell you that you have to sell your welder skills at a cheap rate?
I understand.
That's what I'm saying, Bill. It's First Amendment Friday, and I appreciate a good call. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show.